Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 523, Round Objects, recorded live on January 14th, 2016. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Biowolf.
And tonight we have a very special lineup of guests for you, as we are going to be talking some Halo 5 Forge. For those that are not aware and are somehow listening to this podcast, we got Forge in last month's update, which has been crazy for the amount of content that has been coming out. Maps have been wonderful to watch, and then we've got some cool Forge tip videos. There's been lots of really cool Forge stuff. So we have the community cartographers on with us tonight. Everyone that got to go to 343 and help out with some of the Forge stuff, helping them kind of revamp the tool and make some of the big team maps that you're now playing in matchmaking on Halo 5. Starting off, we have a few returning guests. First is going to be Duquesne23 from Halo Vanguards on YouTube and ForgeChannel.com. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. Except Biowolf is here, so it's a disappointment.
Looking for a home, so I put him up in the temporary place, you know.
I guess.
You know.
Wow, is that really what I'm... Okay.
He's a welcome addition, so. Next up, we have the Psycho Duck from Halo Customs and the Forge Hub video team. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I just want to say that we have round objects.
Oh, that voice. Sounds exactly like that guy in that one video.
Several videos as of late, actually. But yeah, you're also returning back, so welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We also have returning Knockyard from Griffball Hub and Halo Gaff.
Greetings. How's it going?
Going well. How's the how's the Griffball coming?
What Griffball?
Yeah, there's we only saw the hammer.
There's no Griff Ball, honestly.
Yeah, still waiting for that.
Well, they showed a little, you know,
they've been teasing all kinds of cool stuff.
A sketch of a looks like a Griff Ball, you know.
Yeah, definitely could be.
Mm-hmm. Hammer time.
Other than that, it's going great. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. We also have Warholic, which he has asked me to introduce him as Forge Hub for life. He's also from Forge Hub.
I love that it made you say that. Yes, hi everyone. This is Warholic.
Welcome. This is your first time on the show, actually, I believe.
It is. I'll do anything once. I said that before.
No, not officially, you didn't.
Yeah, we weren't on the air yet, so it counts now.
Starting now.
And then we also have another interesting introduction. The Faded Fire, Master Troll, and Death Pit Extraordinaire.
He wasn't serious when he wrote that.
You asked.
Yeah, he was.
You said you were going to read these verbatim.
I told you guys.
That was your mistake.
Type in the chat how you want me to introduce you. So, but welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. I'll try not to start too many fires while I'm on here tonight. But no promises. So, yeah, but thanks for having me.
Well, welcome, everybody. Like I said before, a few of them are returning. So we have Duquesne23, the Psycho Duck, and Knockyard returning. So thank you guys for being on here again. But with the new faces, what we like to do over here on Podtacular is get a little bit of background introduction for you guys, kind of how you got your start in Halo, what you kind of do with Halo now. So Warholic, let's start with you. How did you first get involved with Halo, and what has kept you going in the direction of Forge for Halo?
Wow. Okay. Loaded question. Well, I've been playing video games ever since I was little, and I never really got into level editors that much, other than like Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 on the Dreamcast. So all of that was very relatively new. I found a lot of passion with the first Halo that came out for Xbox, and I've been playing it ever since. I didn't do any LANs or multiplayer until Halo 3, and then I really just kind of fell in love with the entire experience. And I guess when Halo Reach came around, I started playing the game at a really competitive level, modestly. You know, I didn't go to any events or anything, but I considered myself to be a good, valuable team member at the time.
Try hard.
And then I whatever you want to call it. And then I started looking at all these Forge maps that we were playing, and all of my teammates were like, oh, these maps suck. And I was kind of the opposite. I was like, no, these things are so cool. And then I would pop in Forge and I'd pull them apart and see how they're made. And then I started going online and trying to find more maps. And I kind of just broke away from the whole drive of playing the game competitively. And I just wanted to learn how to do this thing that people were creating, like Forge. And I was just kind of mesmerized with it. And it's kind of just snowballed since. And I never really let it go.
Nice. So is it kind of something that was there any particular community that kind of helped foster that development, or is it just was you just got interested in it and it's something that you've been kind of jumping around to different places just trying to make maps?
I guess the first place that I really found a community around these Forge maps was like the OG Forge Hub. And I met a lot of people on that site, including everyone here in this chat. I recognized, you know, Dana, Psycho Duck, and Nakir, and all these guys from Forge Hub. I think Faded was the only one that really came in at a later stage during the Halo Council life cycle.
Ooh, I remember those days.
Yeah, those were fun times. They really were. I guess that's also something I should note, is that I was a part of the staff at the Halo Council before it went offline. And I was doing a lot of Forge stuff there with a Polish Korean, or APK. He kind of brought me on the team before he left. And then I was kind of running things there. But now I'm running, we're helping out with Forge Hub as much as I can with the limited time that I have. And it's been fun.
Well, I've been watching Forge Hub videos nonstop since you guys have been cranking them out left and right since the Forge update.
Oh, so. Yeah. No, Duck's been amazing at putting up tutorials and map features. So. He can talk more about that.
Yeah, well, it's not just me. It's the team. So shout out to those guys.
Nope, it's just you, Duck.
Mostly.
And our other new guest tonight, the Faded Fire. So why don't you give us a little bit of background on how you got your start in Halo and why you Forge?
Hey, guys. Well, my background is kind of similar to Warhawk. And I started playing Halo back in Combat Evolved with my friend Kyle down the street, and we'd always play. We'd go to his house and play for hours, and that went on for years. And I realized that, you know, when you have a really great game, people from the community just want to contribute to it. You know, they want to add their experience and their creative size to create new content to keep expanding this experience that they're having in the game. So it was the same thing for me with Halo. It was just such a good experience, this sense of escapism, you know, where you feel like a hero in this Spartan armor. I was like, I want to create spaces for people to compete in this game. And yeah, I mean, that's how I started Forging, was I just wanted to make these maps for tournaments and for matchmaking, you know, just these really cool places where players could compete and be heroes, you know. So that was my start with Forging.
Very cool. For a lot of the Forge stuff that you're doing now, is there any kind of particular community that you hang around and do your Forge stuff, or do you just kind of do a lot of stuff on your own? How does that work right now?
Right now, I'm mainly at Forge Hub, but in my past, I was at the Halo Council, and I was also a staff member there with Warholic. I was part of their Forge staff, and I ran this testing lobby where people would bring their maps, and you know, we'd test them for hours and give feedback on the forums and in lobby. So I have a lot of experience just seeing a ton of content and analyzing it and helping people improve their maps over time. So it started on the Halo Council, and then it went on to Forge Hub after that.
Very cool. Well, thanks, guys, for the quick introduction. Let's go ahead and cover a couple of news things real quick before we dive deep into the Forge discussion. So for those that haven't seen the news today, ESPN announced that Halo 5 is going to be at the X Games. So they're flying in 6 North American teams and 2 international teams for kind of a little exhibition tournament. It's similar to how the online play is going right now. It's single elimination.
Except they'll be playing on motorcycles.
Instead of the X Racer chairs. Yeah. That would be pretty interesting, actually. That's sick. So that's going down the last weekend in January. So it's going to be January 28th through January 31st. 3-day tournament, single elimination group play, and it's a prize pool of $30,000, and medals are going to be awarded as well. So they're actually getting X Games medals for playing Halo, which is kind of cool.
That's awesome.
That is pretty neat.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
So I want a medal.
You going to Aspen?
Yeah, well, I want to know why isn't X Games doing a Mongoose trick competition, you know, since it's more more in their style. I'm just saying, you know.
Right. Now that we can forge half pipes.
Everyone's risking their lives on the other sports, and here we are just giving ourselves carpal tunnel syndrome with our thumbs.
I'm risking my life. I'm getting
fat. This is a hard life.
You're getting fat. My health is at risk. I'm getting fat and eating Cheetos, Doritos, and Mountain Dew as I forge.
No, Oreos.
And Gatorade.
How many packs a day are those?
We actually just bought a pack yesterday, and it's already gone.
Wow.
We love it. That's why I don't buy Oreos that often. So, yeah.
There was some study a while ago that came out saying Oreos were more addicting than crack.
Huh? I believe it.
Yeah.
Especially them deep fried.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
That's so bad for you.
No, this is true.
And yeah. And
I don't believe it. I'll have to do more research into the subject.
Yeah. Talking about X Games, how do you guys feel about like a Halo themed paintball park? I mean, where they would physically recreate, you know, existing maps like the Pit or Timberlands, and you're running through the woods, and you got
Breakout
the
would be
set up.
Perfect since Breakout is based on paintball.
It's actually interesting you say that. Me and a couple of buddies a year ago actually were sketching up plans. Our buddy's dad had 40 acres just for no use whatsoever. And we thought of actually doing that to do a paintball course. It was airsoft at first, and then we started thinking about paintball.
Oh my god, what map are you guys thinking about?
We're thinking about the Pit.
Oh my god, this is like forging in real life. Do you realize?
Yeah.
Well, they did it for San Diego Comic-Con this past year with the Breakout Arena. So it's definitely possible. It would work.
Just need paintball guns instead of Nerf.
Think of all that light, man.
Okay, it's Boom Co.
Unlimited budget.
Let's be franchise correct here. It's Boom Co., not Nerf.
Oh, whatever. I always say Lego instead of Mega Bloks. So,
hey, speaking of budgets, should we talk about the new Forge at all? Because it did get quite an overhaul. Whereas like the previous system, you know, Halo Reach, Halo 4, they all had like 651 objects as a maximum. Like if you kind of were kind of modding the canvases like I was with Lord Zed and some other people.
He said I hated that I used modded stuff for making like race maps and everything.
Mm-hmm, yeah, he always made
I barely made anything off of modded canvases. I only used the modded canvas.
Noob. Yeah.
Noob,
only the one.
And now we don't have to. Now we have open budget system.
And you know, they won't be able to mod the canvases.
For pieces.
Because they can't mod the Xbox One. So.
The Xbox One.
But yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. I want to just cover the recent news before we dive headfirst into the Forge stuff, because that's going to be the main focus. I just want to knock this new stuff out of the way real quick. But yeah, so if you're in the area in Aspen, Colorado, you can go there, probably catch some of the action. They will be streaming it on Watch ESPN, MLG, and Twitch. The normal channels for Twitch is twitch.tv/Halo, and then mlg.tv/Halo. They'll be there for the whole weekend. And then there's going to be highlights actually broadcasted during the X Games on ESPN. So that's pretty cool. Halo's going to get some coverage on national TV.
Yeah, that's awesome. As it should be.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
I think also some worthy news is that Activision purchased MLG for, I believe, $47 million dollars.
Yeah, something like that. We covered that last week, actually.
Oh, okay.
And
get with the times.
Well, MLG is hosting the national American finals, and so it's a part of it.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit, Conan, going through the history of how Halo has gone through MLG, AGL, HCS, all that stuff.
Oh my god, but did you just say AGL?
Well, yeah,
aren't we supposed to repress that from our memories?
to be fair, they did supply a competitive platform to have it, so while people don't really like the thought of it, They did try to at least keep competitive Halo alive. They tried.
Yeah, and I think they did extend the lifeline for a little bit, but it's just a little bit unfortunate that people that ran that league weren't really sufficient to pay out everyone.
This is true. That is a very unfortunate side effect. But so yes, if you're going to be watching the X Games at the end of this month, then you'll be able to catch some Halo action in there. You'll be able to catch some of the North American teams and then two of the international teams in there. This isn't going to affect the finals at all for regionals, not going to affect any placements. So this is purely just a event that's kind of inside of the World Championship Series, but it's not going to affect the standings at all. But it's still pretty cool. They get medals for it, which is pretty cool.
And $30,000. Yeah. Oh, wait, no, not 30.
That's a total prize pool.
Oh, so okay, it is.
First place is probably going to get something like
15, 12, second, 10,
12, something. Probably like 12,000 for first, something like that. I'm guessing they're being flown out there too, so they get to travel there and then they get a little bit of extra money there, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the passes, I mean, if you have the 4-day passes, are like 1,500 a piece right there.
Yeah. Next, all we need is Halo in the Olympics. We're good.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
So I did put out a tweet today, and I was kind of a little offended I didn't get any retweets or any replies from ForgeUp because I mentioned this to you, saying that we need to make some X Game stuff inside of Halo 5 now that they're actually doing this. So we do need to make some kind of Mongoose slalom course.
Hey.
Oh, I see.
Hey.
That is an interesting idea.
That's already on the list. Duquesne's, that's already on the list.
When I saw that, I'm like, this is well, you need to get it out before the X Games come so you can have a little video that they can play during the stream. If they can't pick it up, then your video's on the stream, dude.
Fine.
I'm trying to help you here.
I'll rush that sucker.
That is definitely in Duquesne's territory right there.
I was already planning on making
race
a skate
to that
park,
finish line.
Like a Mongoose skate park. Like, because they've had little skate parks type of things in past, like in, I think in Halo 4, someone made like a little skate park also. But now that you can control your Mongoose, it's going to be a lot better because then you can actually do flips and stuff.
Dude, we could have like a rating panel. You could actually do a legit X Games within Halo 5.
Yeah.
It'd be cool.
Have people standing there.
You know? I mean, there's the Halo Ninja Warrior stuff that's going on right now. I mean, that's something that keeps on coming out on Halo Vanguard. So you just do something that's X Games.
There you go.
There you go. Games. I'm giving you an idea. I should get some kind of compensation here.
I'll give you Echo Oreos.
Yes.
And RTX.
You
okay, that works.
Are entitled to our appreciation.
That works.
Or South. I don't know if you're going PAX South.
I'm not going to South. I will be going to RTX. I will be going to Prime.
Yeah. Duquesne used to go to Prime.
Man, pay for my flight out there.
What do I look like?
A person made money? Hey, I saw your music video. You got to get rich off that.
Oh, my. What? What's this?
I think you need to post that in the Twitch chat
again. Yeah, go ahead and post it again. Yeah.
No, let's.
Anywho.
This. So, I tell you, like, once a month, I'm going to post that. You know, so, just to remind people, know your roots. So,
yeah. That reminds me, we really need to get that shirt out, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is Pontacular making some clothing?
So we had a very, very, very limited run of a hashtag Blame Bible shirt.
This is a good shirt.
Yes. We'll probably be doing something along the lines of a small kind of Pontacular store in the future. And that would be one of the shirts.
Cool.
Actually, might do a T-chip with that shirt, to be honest. I just need to get down and work out the logistics for that. But going on to some other news, because I know we want to talk Forge here. The last community update that we had was right after our last podcast, and we got announced the January update, which is going to become likely the last week in January, and it's called Infinity's Armory. We don't know too much other than what was teased during last month's live streamed, and then we have a picture of one of the new maps that we're getting, one of the new arena maps. I don't know if this is a reimagining of a map. It looks like it could be, or it could be a new map.
It looks like a reimagining of Fathom. To me.
Yeah, it's got the bridge from Fathom.
Yeah. So and Fathom's underwater. Like this one has sand and everything. So
yeah, it looks like it's
structure from Fathom,
a dried lake or whatever.
So definitely makes sense. And then you got in the little kind of stasis pod. Looks like there's underwater plant life type stuff. So it very well could be. They released a overall playlist popularity from the holiday playlist that were thrown in there. So there was Holiday Social and Holiday Doubles.
Why was Doubles so low in that list?
I don't know.
Because it's all on Forest maps. If there were dedicated Doubles maps, it would probably be a
Doubles
lot more
sucks. I said it!
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Snap, son.
No. It's, I don't know. I feel not as many people play Doubles. It's just people are more vocal about it, about wanting it. That's why I think. So, like, the majority of people won't just go in with 2v2 type thing or whatever it is, whatever Doubles is. I don't even play it, so I don't know. So,
well, you're right. It is 2v2, so.
Yes!
You do have that.
I played it every once in a while, like, long time ago. So.
Yeah.
It just needs some dedicated maps, and I'm sure it'll be a lot more popular. Right now, with the map scaling and the weapon setup on those maps is designed for 4v4 play, so it's not ideal for 2v2.
Right.
So it's just not the optimal experience.
It needs its own settings. Right. But I do think that it's a very important playlist. I mean, people love Doubles so much because, you know, it's just you and that one other really important teammate, right? Like, it's kind of like a marriage, you know? It's just you and the other person and taking on the world, right? And people love just having that one person that they're talking to, you know, that one person that they can lean on to compete against these other groups of two. And I mean, I've always loved playing Doubles, especially on midship and small maps like that. So they can really make this experience a good experience for Doubles, you know, smaller maps, the right settings. I think it will be a better playlist in the long run.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. They need to get more permanent playlists in there. Like, even though I don't play Doubles, I think it should be permanent, you know?
Eventually, I think it will be. I think it's going to be a little time before, because we still have more game types that we're waiting for.
Wow. Which, February is coming up, and that would be perfect to kind of solidify around Valentine's Day, because, you know, Faded was talking about the romanticism that happens with the 2v2 play, you know, where you really have to kind of listen and be cooperative. And
343, you paying attention?
Yes. Yeah, no. Valentine's Day release date.
That would be pretty funny to see, like, Valentine's Day, like, hearts everywhere and Doubles is permanent, you know, or whatever. That would be pretty
grab
funny.
Your partner and it's like, yeah, will you be my Doubles partner?
Oh my god.
That's actually, we're doing a little Valentine's Day thing on Halo Customs. It's not a Doubles thing, but it's a 2v2v2. It's like a casual little game night, but it's supposed to be like bring a Valentine, and, you know, it's supposed to be kind of cute and silly like that.
I actually made a Valentine's Day map in Halo 4.
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah, that was
pretty amazing.
It was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I'll ask you about that in a second. There is another update to the Forge, or not the Forge, the file share. So instead of holding 40 game types and custom maps, you can actually hold up to 100 custom maps and game types in your file share now.
You need to hold your pinky up to your face when you say that.
Hold up to 100 maps and game types.
There we go.
There you go. So you got a little more space to work with now for custom maps and game types. No file browser yet. That is something that I think a lot of people are really asking for. And I don't think there's any reason we're not going to get one in the future, because when they did release Forge, they said this was a basic implementation, which kind of hinted at the fact that we're going to get something bigger later on.
And Tom French is constantly telling people, you know, on Twitter that, you know, a more robust one's coming. So,
you know, to break out more Austin Powers references, I think Tom French has like this superpower where, like, if he was an X-Men, he can like break himself down into like 10 little mini-me's. And like, he has one guy that's constantly on Twitter answering everybody's question. And like, he has another little miniature, you know, Tom French that's actually like working and building on Forge. And then like
another one actually, playing like, with Olive the pig.
Yeah, playing with Olive at home with his family. And he like just like groups them all together at the end of the day and like synchronizes back into like fully formed Tom French.
They all like to sleep. Come out of his beard.
He's the master wizard.
And they like come back at the end of the day and like
he's the master wizard of the Forge team, you know, like he just has this
like a wizard.
Crazy Tom does a great job of answering questions on Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't know how he does it.
Cool. It's like I think Mike, he said that whenever like I put on there, I was like, I would like, you know, 1,000 or whatever, you know, not just 100. And he says the 100 is just the first step. So
yeah,
they're probably gonna be
they're 200. Absolutely
that
stuff.
Yeah.
It's all just in progress.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's all based on how much space they reserve on the cloud service.
Yep.
I really do think we need more space on the cloud service. Okay. 100 is still not enough for me.
Yeah. No.
We need at least like 300.
Yeah, in the long run.
No, we need like 4 clouds. That's how it works, right?
Yeah, clouds. Right.
Yeah, and then we kick Tom French down well.
Clouds and store files. And...
Are you going to decloud him? I know that was bad. I'll walk myself out. We'll swing back around to that when we start with the Forge discussion. A couple other things that we're coming up with is, unfortunately, no game modes. It doesn't seem like for the next couple of months, but they did tease an image that could hint at Oddball or Griffball. There's a ball with setting. A plate.
There's a ball.
All those talking some about kind balls?
Of, could be yeah. a ricochet.
Just say sphere.
Yeah. Could be an oddball.
Circles.
Sphere. Could be an assault
round
ball.
Round objects.
Round objects, yes.
Could be a round flag.
It's a new vehicle.
Yes.
So, here we go.
Metroid
it
ball?
Could be that.
The hamster ball?
The light bulb that Johnson rides at the end of Halo 2.
Don't shake the light bulb. So yes, unfortunately, there are no game modes coming in this month's update. And judging by the way they worded it, probably not next month's update either, which kind of sucks.
We don't know that.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
We don't know that.
Yeah.
I think it's just that they aren't going to say something until they've got it until they down.
Yeah.
What are you saying about Garrett?
I'm just saying they've got to be working on something. That's all there is to it. Right. They got to be working on something. But
they're doing not nothing, you know.
Yeah.
It's they're just definitely negative.
That's they're working on game types. You don't have to worry. Like they'll come eventually. Like I know, you know. Besides like grip ball, because that's a really important game type to have in there. Because for one thing, there's a whole community around it. But then infection is, I'd say, the next thing they need to get in there.
Yes.
Just because infection for customs is a massive, like, just from a mini game standpoint, and of course, like, typical infection and stuff. It's really important. And this is coming from a race person, but I know it's not that important. But, you know, they're working on everything. Like, they're working on race. They're doing all that type of stuff. So,
well, oddball would be nice because, I mean, even if you have oddball, you can still get griffball out of that. So that's kind of two for one there.
Until you have to reverse engineer it the other way around this time.
Yeah,
very well might have to. King of the Hill is kind of a spinoff. I mean, they already have the hill type of structure in there with Stronghold. So that'd be
nice.
If
King of the Hill was there, then we can have the old-fashioned Halo 3 race game type. That'd be nice, at least.
Well, that was Halo 3 race was built off of VIP. It was built off King of the Hill and Halo 4.
Wow. Yeah. So Forge Hub did this poll. And we asked like the Twitter community what custom game mode they would like to see return to Halo 5 the most. And Infection got the majority vote at 60%, and King of the Hill under it at 16%. And that was like almost 400 votes there.
Yeah, so that's
people definitely want Infection. The data is
there. We did a similar poll on Halo Customs with a similar amount of votes. And it was, I think, Infection was the top. Followed by race, followed by assault, which we went into that assuming assault would also be an opportunity to build griffball because griffball was originally built off of assault. Uh-huh. So I think those were the top three in our poll. So those are definitely some of the big ones.
So in addition to some of the stuff that's coming to Halo 5, Master Chief Collection got a tiny update as well. For the matchmaking system, instead of searching for the closest 9 level players, you're going to be looking for the closest 14. That'll hopefully speed up some of the matchmaking, and you won't be waiting as long to get matches. Also, Infection has returned to the playlists for matchmaking, and they have removed or retired the HCS and the Halo CE 4v4 playlists. So that is an ongoing thing for Master Chief Collection, with them consolidating playlists and looking for other things to bring back for those that are still playing Master Chief Collection. And then from the other, from the community update, there is some new community highlights for some Forge maps. One of which I think was really cool was a reimagining of the pit for Breakout. And this was actually made by Berserk on Xbox Live and Little Black Bubba, which our friends, I think, with quite a few people in here.
He's in the chat.
Mm.
He's in the chat right now.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Hey. There oh. He, yep, there he is. So, yeah, that was one of the spotlights on the community side, and it's a really cool map. I actually want to go play this, and I would like to see this actually get put into matchmaking at some point.
Yeah. It'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah. And it's called Simulation.
It's the breakout game type that it's made for, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Simulation is a...
Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks like a breakout map. Like, there's that other Pit remake that was a more... Like, it was a legitimate Pit remake. Like, it wasn't for Breakout or anything. But this one is the Breakout Pit.
So that's pretty much it for the news. It's still a little slow coming off from the holiday season. We're probably going to get quite a bit more over the next couple weeks as we learn more about Infinity's Armory, which is the January update. Sounds like it's pretty much slated to come out the last week of January, just before we get to watch the World Championship at the X Games. So, fun stuff there. Fun stuff all around. So, time to get to the Big Forge discussions. So, where to start? I think the big thing that everyone wants to kind of hear about is, overall, what's your general impression of Halo 5 Forge compared to the previous iterations of Forge that we've had? I mean, we've got quite a few things. We've got the scripting. We've got a crap ton of objects. We have visual effects, lighting, audio pits. Who wants to start?
Yeah, it's not so much that we have all these new features, is that using them all together, you can make some phenomenal looking maps. You know, you looking at a checklist doesn't really do it justice. It's when you combine them and combine the lighting with the canvases and everything, that's when it really shines, and the new pieces and that, and the different ways of using them, and the new creative way that people are already finding to use rather mundane looking pieces. It's just amazing.
I think the main question that everyone had before Forge was actually released and in their hands was, are we going to see such a generational leap that the community saw when Halo Reach released their Forge system in comparison to its predecessor in Halo 3? And that huge marginal leap, you know, they were kind of looking for again, and they never got it until Halo 5's Forge released. And it was, you know, a true leap forward in like both systemically with the amount of objects that can be handled, to just the you know, the details with the lighting that you were mentioning as well. a lot of people kind of forget, but the original Xbox 360 had 512 like megabytes of RAM, and jumping forward onto Xbox One, you know, now we have 8 gigabytes of RAM, and that's like a 1500% increase. So, in Halo Reach and Halo 4, and mind you, Halo 4 actually did have dynamic lighting as well. Had about 651 objects if you really stretched it to its maximum, and that was the hard object limit. You couldn't place another spawn point if you wanted to on that map. And you know, now we're at 1,024 objects in Halo 5, so that's like a 57% increase. You know what? Looking at those numbers, it kind of feels like we could almost get more. I hate being that guy that always thinks that we could get more, but you know,
the most amazing part is we can actually place those 1,024 pieces and not have it affect frame rate. Where before, if you were hitting 300, depending on which pieces you used, you were toast.
Yeah, yeah, you use glass pieces in those. Oh my goodness.
You know, a lot of people are wondering, it's like, okay, when is my map going to be horrible? You know, it's always that gargoyle standing over their shoulders. It's like, I'm frame rate, I'm going to make your map bad.
Or if you put too many pieces. I remember one of my maps in Reach, you put too many pieces in one little area, the map starts to flash.
Oh, the disco.
Like pieces would flash
disco. In effect. Yeah. The disco.
And so that's another issue that you know, that's not there in Halo 5. So.
That was gone in Halo 4 with the dynamic lighting systems introduction. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the capability of this Forge is miles ahead of anything previously. And yeah, from an actual like budgetary limitation standpoint, but also from a performance standpoint, you know, you can build a map that is vastly more dense and populated with detailed objects than anything you ever could before in the past and, you know, have it run at 60 frames per second with no hitches, which is pretty cool.
One of the other cool thing I like too that they introduced is those little meters at the bottom. So you know how many objects that you have in there, you know how it's affecting the actual engine, so you know when it's going to actually be played, how it's people are going to expect or see frame rate drop or whatnot. So that's actually kind of cool. You get dynamic feedback on that.
Halo 4, the light matte budget was combined together with the object limitation. And it was just super confusing for people because they didn't even know what dynamic lighting was at the time. And so they would exceed their light map and they would look at their budget and they'd say, well, I'm within means to create more objects. What's happening to my map right now? And then, so that's why we have multiple meters for everything now.
Mm-hmm. And from a technical standpoint, is that better for you guys or is that something that's a little more for someone that maybe just is starting out with Forge? Is that a little overwhelming for some people that you have to get used to, or is having all that technical information there, knowing how your map is actually going to be affected with gameplay and a bunch of action, is that really helpful for kind of that mid stage, or is that really kind of more advanced users?
You know, my sister is not a huge Forger, but she loved to, you know, mess around on Halo Reach and Halo 4. And she got a hold of Halo 5. And she said that she was having anxiety issues, that she was pushing buttons in the wrong way and she couldn't rotate her objects, and that the control scheme was completely different, which is true. And that she was missing the prefabricated structures. You know, she's not really a level designer. She wanted to kind of just create things for fun. So, you know, she had more of a hard time creating things from scratch, whereas the previous systems kind of gave an allowance to pick up the pace for you with some prefab structures. So I think from like a really nascent standpoint, maybe that'll be the first kind of experience or reaction for people that are just getting into Halo 5's Forge for the first time. I mean, in the studio, I'm sure everyone can talk about you know, how unfamiliar the control scheme was. But thankfully, you know, Tom even confirmed just recently within the past 2 days that they're going to be looking at prefabricated building structures in a really exciting way, and that's going to be coming in future updates.
So I'm guessing, judging by the sounds of what you just said, the learning curve in Halo 5 is Forge is a lot steeper than it has been in past Halo games.
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, that comes with the added power, because this new Forge is in a lot of ways more akin to professional development tools like Autodesk Maya, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's still not quite there yet. It's still you're building with a controller. It's in game. It's on console. But, you know, there's so much more power. And I think the way everything's communicated to the user is very intuitive. But just because there's so much there, it's definitely a steeper learning curve than it has been in the past. But it gives just so much more to the people who do put the time in to really understand the tools, can do so much more with it. We don't have those arbitrary restrictions anymore. It just kind of exposes the hard, like hardware limitations of the Xbox and how it's processing the game, instead of having these arbitrary limitations and stuff. So it's kind of a trade-off, I suppose. Yeah, it might alienate some less experienced users, but I think it's worth it for what we can create with these new tools, for sure.
Yeah, it is. This is a labor of love, and while it takes us longer to create our maps because we just have more tools available, you know, we can customize everything and refine it, you know, 10 times or more further than we have in the past. And I think the result will really kind of make up for the complicated, you know, systems that we're actually using. So amazing stuff is going to be coming out as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. And I know this may sound a little condescending, but it almost makes it sound like because of how technical the new Forge is, people that are going to take the time to make the maps are probably those people that are a little more talented, know how to make the maps, and therefore the overall quality of the maps that we end up seeing are probably going to be better, and people are going to want to play those a little more so than maybe the kind of the dilution that we got in Halo 4, per se.
Mm. I can agree with that.
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, there's definitely, I think, the gap between like good map and a great map, not in terms of design, but in terms of polish, is definitely a lot wider now, because there's so much more you can do to really bring your map, like, visually, and not just visually, but to the next level, as far as really going in depth with lighting, with intro and outro cinematics, with
scripting,
you know, like named location volumes, with scripting, with, you know, just all that stuff. There's a lot more depth there. So yeah, I mean, I think that will sort of over time allow the people who really invest the time into every last detail to, you know, make their maps stand out for sure.
I know one guy, his name's Mythical Twinkie. He's made some city maps and stuff, and one of them's, I think, called Downzone, I think, but it's a BTB map, and it looks amazing. Like, it looks ridiculously amazing. So people are going to make some really amazing stuff, like, that look more realistic and not necessarily as just a Forge map and everything.
And that's awesome.
To add on to what Duck was saying about making maps look amazing, you can definitely do that in this Forge. You can provide this really great sense of escapism with the environment itself, right? Like, in previous Forges, it was very hard to be a good artist within it and to actually make the place feel real. But in this Forge, there's so many tools with lighting and with the environment that you can just really create these escapes for people. But as part of the team that actually helps decide which maps get into matchmaking, it's also important to focus on the map design at the core as well, which is where my focus is. I'm less of an artist and more of a, like, a gameplay designer. So you can make this really great looking space that doesn't play well, right? And it's really important to have both, you know, to combine the really good design with the amazing art and really let players, you know, be in this escape when, like, you combine both of what they can do in the game and how they view the game itself.
Right. Yeah, that's a really important point. And even something else is in terms of readability as well. If you invest too much into arting your map, you might make it very immersive and very believable and very realistic looking. But if you end up having all these busy textures and really, like, moody lighting and stuff, you might actually harm gameplay in doing so, because the space is less readable. It's harder to acquire targets, to identify opposing players, to differentiate walls from floors, and your sense of depth perception is thrown off and stuff. But also just, yeah, I mean, designing a good level at its core is still the most important part of the process, hands down. Yep. You know, if you can do that and then dress it up in a way that looks fantastic, then you've really got something. But, you know, if you don't have that strong gameplay foundation to work from, then, you know, then it doesn't really get you that far.
And to add on to that, to what Warholic said earlier, that it takes longer to make maps, I'd actually argue that some of the new features, like smart magnets, you can actually throw together blockouts of maps extremely quickly now. Like, you can take this idea that's in your head and just throw it together in minutes and have it playable within, like, an hour now, whereas that would have taken hours and hours to days before just to have a space playable and ready to test. But now you can really quickly just throw together geometry and quickly iterate on it, which is something that I love personally, because I'm constantly changing my mind about things in gameplay and the experience itself. So the fact that I can change things in a second now, whereas it would have taken hours before, is amazing. You know, the tool is really powerful in that sense.
Yeah.
Something else. Yeah, the multi-select and group tool really does help as a huge time saver. It's just the other additional features that I think extend the time to build a little bit further, which isn't a bad thing. It's a great thing. I would love to have, you know, customized lighting and intro cinematics and sound emitters and all of these little details to flesh out our maps. You know, like, these we didn't even have to worry about in the past. Now we have a huge palette in front of us to work with. And so, you know, creating a map, sure, yeah, we can design and build, you know, very, very swiftly. But in terms of, like, refinement and polish and, like, completing a map to the best possible version, like, you can really devote a lot of time.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree for sure.
one thing I have seen with dressing up your map a little bit. Something that actually me and you and Eli were talking about at E3 is that a lot of stuff could be a little bit distracting, especially with the new lighting effects that they have with this forge. There was something that I was playing a map a couple days ago. They put a little too much flair into it. So me being distracted by it constantly gets a kill. But it's interesting to see how things evolve over that, because there's some other maps that I've seen that were just absolutely gorgeous and were perfect. Like there's so many things you could do with this now that's actually really cool. Duquesne, there was actually a map that you showed me that I was just blown away by. Like the fact that it was a forged map, it just blew me away. I forgot which one it was. You may remember.
I don't know. It was probably Mythical Twinkies, like one of his, you know, because I think I showed you one of his earlier. I can't remember which one it was called, but yeah, he makes some beautiful maps. They don't really play too well for BTB. Like, you know, like he mainly goes for looks on his maps. They're still fun to play on, though. It's not anything competitive. It's just if you're goofing off with friends and everything and you just hop on that map and have fun. So
yeah. Something else that I really wanted to test, and I haven't actually done it yet, is to do landscapes and different things like that for screenshots. I'm a huge screenshot guy. So when I was looking through all these different things with smoke, you know, the lighting effects, flares, all these different things, it really makes me wonder what else people can do apart from just screenshots. I mean, like Drax. Yeah, well, just machinima work and stuff like that. But something that was really cool was Drax from Ready Up Live made a Christmas looking, like almost like a Christmas card.
I remember that.
He did that. And he did a really good job. And I was like, that's really, like, he did a really good job. So it's, I love the fact that this has evolved the way it did. Definitely a step up compared to what we've seen from other past Halos for sure.
Absolutely.
Machinima is one of those really cool things too that I hope we see a resurgence, because there's so much in terms of aesthetics and all the little visual effects. You have fire, you have the actual like spotlights that you can have different kind of like filters that you can put in them.
Well, you have machinima controls right in the
that too.
So they give you all the tools for that.
It is so cool to see them actually putting a lot of support into it, just even past making maps and game types just for playing competitively. Having a bunch of the aesthetic stuff there is really awesome too. So I guess the next thing I want to kind of cover is the economy of Forge. I know we mentioned from the community update last week how they expanded the file share from 40 maps and game types to 100 maps and game types. So I've seen Duquesne post about this, but having a file browser seems kind of to be the big functionality issue kind of in the general Halo game that is missing in order for these game modes and maps to really be shared and experienced. How do you think that's going to affect the economy and the longevity of Forge until we actually get something like that in the game?
We waited about, you know, 6 months until we were given an online file browser system. Hopefully Halo 5, you know, we don't have to wait that long again. You know, we've spoke to Tom about it. They know it's a very prescient issue, and it's on their priority list and kind of up high. It's just that since everything moved to the cloud now, even when we're forging, they had to completely throw out the previous systems where everything was saved locally and start over from scratch, basically. So while they were finishing up Forge, they kind of knew that in the background. So that, I think the back burner is kind of coming into the forefront now, and we should be seeing something relatively soon.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, a lot of people, unfortunately not most people, but there are still a lot of people that, you know, still find maps like, you know, on websites or through YouTube or things like that. So, but unfortunately, you need that file browser there for searching and stuff for people that don't go to sites, like don't go to external sources and stuff. And of course, having a better file share system currently, like that doesn't show people what you're working on, would be also really nice. So you can actually have a map that's somewhat secret without everyone viewing exactly what you're working on. And also screenshots, you can't put screenshots or anything like that onto your file share. So you know, we need to get that put on there, which of course you can capture screenshots through your Xbox One, but it's still not the same to not have a screenshot on, you know, FileShare or something. And oh, videos can't be put on FileShare. So I know Bullet Rebel, he's like our machinima person, like our little video, like montage type of person and everything on Vanguard's. He can't really do too much because people can't put clips on, you know, their, you know, file share, because normally he could take clips from the internet and everything, but he's not able to actually go into the game and, you know, fly around and get what angle he wants for the, you know, montage or something. So that also needs to be put in hopefully soon. We'll see.
I would think that would be something that's pretty easy to patch in, because you already have your saved films, the ones that you've bookmarked at least, accessible from the cloud. So it's just kind of adding an entry to tie that to a file share slot.
Yeah. Though right now, custom game films are kind of screwed up in theater.
They don't always show, yeah.
Right, yeah. In fact, I don't think they ever show except for your most recent completed game. Yeah. So
that only shows on the
even
watch
if you bookmark
now,
it,
right?
Whatever one.
No, you can't. There's nowhere to bookmark it from. It's an issue they're aware of.
Yeah.
When the November update went live, it actually caused an issue with bookmarks in theater, which they patched shortly afterwards. And then I suppose, you know, when the December update was introduced, it introduced another bug into the whole theater system in terms of custom game films. But it's an issue they're aware of. So it's just a matter of time.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm hoping with a lot of the stuff that changes, because back in the days of Halo 3, that was when a lot of community content was coming out. We did have Forge, we had the screenshots, we had Machinima booming back then. So I'm hoping that when we do finally get kind of the online file browser type stuff and some of this other support, that we do see kind of a resurgence of that kind of content. And from the Forge videos that have already seen put out and the custom maps, it seems like it's starting to ramp up to where we are seeing that kind of community content build back up. I'm just wondering, with it being released after the game has released, how many people are actually going to be on board to be making that kind of content?
I think there's been a huge resurgence in the Forge and custom gaming community. It's right now it's more active than it's been since
Reach,
hands down.
Yep.
And yeah, eventually that initial hype wave will wear down a little bit, but hopefully. Some of the additional features like file browser stuff and additional game types coming online will kind of allow that to, you know, that hype to stick around. I think this is, in my opinion, by far the most exciting time for the Forge and custom gaming community in the last several years, certainly. Just much more going on than there was in Halo 4 or the Master Chief Collection, for sure. So,
yeah,
very cool.
We should also provide room for people to get into Forge kind of midway through a game's life cycle, kind of like my story, getting into Forge in Halo Reach. You know, so potentially there's even room for growth of the Forge population currently.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Especially since they're going to be continually putting out stuff every month, you know. Or something that has to do with Forge, so that'd be nice.
Well, wait until Infection comes online, and then all of the people who would normally be forging Infection maps, who are, you know, maybe right now they're not as active. Well, the second Infection comes online, boom.
Yeah. Yep.
So many Infection maps from past Halo games that are going to be recreated.
Ah,
yeah.
The remakes. That's
already
all
some people,
doing right now.
Some people have already made Infection maps, but they just throw them in as Slayer, you know, currently.
Oh, yeah.
And then they'd just be like, okay, we'll just update it whenever, you know.
Turn the fog off, call it a Slayer map.
Yeah, exactly. Because I actually do. I have a map I'm currently making. I want for Infection, but it's right now just a free-for-all Slayer. You know that.
I know. I have a bunch of Slayer maps that are boxes that are just an open square with four spawns on each side.
Oh, and like a neutral objective in the center, too?
Yeah, it's a one flag right now, yeah.
Yeah,
so
crazy.
So I have a lot of those.
One can only
so
be
in regard
guessing.
To the, oh, in regard to the file share system, you know, we kind of conducted this poll on ForgeHub and asked the community how they would like or prefer to download their maps. And
there was an overwhelmingly positive response to downloading maps on a website and having them sync to their console, as yes. opposed to players, you know, with their gamer tag and searching via console.
Halo 3, Halo Reach.
Yes. I actually wouldn't even care if they had a way of searching for maps on Halo 5.
Yeah.
If we had a way just on Waypoint to, you know, click a link and it downloads, you know, like
I think the only time I used the map search feature before was to find contest submissions. Mm-hmm. It was easier just to punch in their gamer tag and take it from there. But otherwise, I never used it. It was, there's, you know, just I always use the online version.
Yeah. It's a lot easier also for like sites, you know, and everything to have a link just to a Waypoint deal or YouTube channels where you can just have a link in the description. Download, you know, that was a lot easier then.
Absolutely.
So, hopefully.
You know, what about improving the file browser system, not just restoring it back to what we had in Halo Reach,
but I think
even driving that, it further
to that, like have to have a special section for anime respawn point art, you know,
like a budgie, favorite type of thing. That,
you know, we could actually create sections or folders or folders. Albums.
Folders would be great.
I've been pushing for folders since Halo 3 stopped doing it.
Yeah, so we can organize all of our own personal maps. And have them under a title of My Maps, or like, you know, people like Duck and I that are very community involved, and we host a lot of contests, and we have hundreds of maps that we need to sift through and go through and test. I'd like to have a folder that, you know, with contest submissions or whatever the contest name is, where you can create a folder for Infection, and it's just so easy to find the maps that you want to play for your lobby when you're hosting
folder
it.
For the winners of the contest, that sort of thing.
You can be a better host and find the maps that you're looking for quicker. And,
when you're hosting lobbies.
Wait for less time. Yeah, it would be great. Yeah,
I hosted my first lobby since, I think, Reach the other night. I hosted a big team battle lobby with Psycho Duck. And well, first of all, it was amazing that we were turning away people after about 10 minutes. That was the most amazing part, because I haven't done that in a long time. But finding the maps and getting the maps and getting a set list, it's like impossible. I was just like typing the chat, who wants to put a map up, you know, because, you know, I didn't know where to go or here's a crazy idea.
What if we had the ability, similar to how people build playlists for music? You know, you always pick your favorite songs and you have your playlist. And of course, like everyone knows what a playlist is in matchmaking. Yeah. But what if we could actually create our own custom playlists?
Yeah.
And further,
so people could just download one link, they would get all the maps in our playlist.
Right.
That'd be so cool. And like then Spotify, you can, for custom games.
You know, completely customize a custom lobby before it starts and say, okay, here are the maps that we're going to play, and this is the sequence, and it's just going to be as quick as matchmaking.
And then
the
just
next map is loading up in 10 seconds.
And then when you go to your lobby, you just press play.
Yep. And you can even share that playlist with others.
That's right. And so you end up playing the 10 maps in the playlist, and then if that's done, people are still around, throw in a 4v4 playlist.
Now you can go further than that. Take what Battlefield does with their actual servers, where they like people pay money, you know, for servers, like for owning a server on there. And you could do that with Halo, since I know Microsoft loves making money. So this is a way that people can actually pay them to own their own server. And then those
have servers show up in the rec packs.
But if you actually pay and own your own server in Halo, like for a custom game, it basically then you could just put in a list of like 10 maps or however many maps you want. And people could just jump in anytime, leave anytime, something like that. And then they could just be playing those maps, and it just keeps going consecutively. Like once one's done, then it goes to the next map, and people can stay and play or try something else.
It's a fantastic idea. The one thing that I would be reserved about is dividing populations. That's the only drawback, really. And it's kind of a big one.
Yeah.
Mm.
Because that's the you're pulling the player pool out of Warzone or out of 4v4. I can see them not doing it for that reason, but I think everything else around it has to be easier.
But Microsoft loves money, so they can get more money off of this way than people playing.
Well, no, just make it available in Russia only. That would be, you know.
Oh my gosh!
Oh yeah.
Sorry, did I hit a nerve?
Actually, that beta ended.
I'm just kidding around. I know, yeah.
Believe it or not.
And it's not coming back.
No, it's not. They really should release MCC on the PC. But that's another topic for another day. So for as much as, I guess, kind of generally that we've been talking about Forge, let's kind of dive into some of the specifics. So one of the things I'm most excited about is the scripting elements of... I mean, we got the introduction in Halo 2 Anniversary's Forge, which was pretty cool. But there is so much stuff that you can do with scripting in Halo 5 Guardians. Just on that level, we probably just have a podcast on that alone. But how's the scripting in this, and kind of what are the strengths that we have that we'll probably see in a lot of the maps?
It's a fantastic system.
It is. Go ahead, Mike. I was just going to say, before you say that, it's still a little bit broken, and there's still a few missing pieces. But otherwise, it is fantastic.
Yeah, right now, there is some missing functionality, like there are not trigger volumes, for example. And there are not timers that can run independently of the map start, right? So if you want a timer, it either has to be built off the map start or, we've, as a community, come up with these workarounds. So for the timers, I've come up with a dummy timer workaround where you actually outsource, because the scripting system doesn't possess that specific type of logic to have a timer countdown under these conditions, I actually outsource that logic to a different system in the game. So that system is the respawn time on an object. So I create a dummy timer, I despawn it, and then I respawn it, and then it, that creates a timer that I can activate on any condition I specify. Someone, Dr. Sammy D, came up with these pressure plates, which are effectively like trigger volumes. You know, we have these workarounds right now, and Tom French is a big scripting geek. He is a big fan of all of these scripting functions. He definitely wants to get things like triggers in and stuff. But the scripting system is really cool right now. I mean, there's a ton you can do with it. People have done some great stuff with it. We see elevators. I scripted an ivory tower lift. People have been scripting cool mini games. Knockyard's been working on some cool scripting stuff, I know. There's a ton of depth to it, too. But as Knockyard said, there are some kinks as well. So,
yeah, that's perfect, one of the things I'm really interested in, because one of the first things I want to make, or Forge at least, is either a visible timer or a 7-segment display, just to see what I can do with the scripting.
Oh, like a digital timer. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Like a digital clock on the wall. That would be a cool thing to attempt to, script.
Yeah.
I'd like to see scripting contests. I think that would be something cool.
Yeah. So I'm going to
think of something really difficult and have a, have a contest based around the most efficient way to script it.
That'd be really cool.
Budocrine would always win, but.
But that kind of stuff, I think, would be an interesting way to get the community involved. Because that also kind of branches out the utilization of Halo 5 Forge.
Sorting out problems and clever scripting things.
So that would be really interesting to see, just having a little contest like that. And there's another...
I must say, though, I have a script on every map I've made. At least one script on every map I've made. Hmm. Actually, at least 12 scripts on every map I've made. if you count the moving parts of it as well, because they all count. Every moving part in the script counts as a script.
Yeah. See, it's funny for me because I've been investing a ton of time into learning the scripting system to do tutorials. You know, people request like the guys who made that Ivory Tower remake that was in the community update last week. You know, they messaged me and were like, hey, can you script an Ivory Tower lift? And I was like, let me think about that. And then, I figured it out and I scripted that. Or someone was like, hey, can we make timers last more than 3 minutes? So, I came up with a method for that. So, I'm doing all this scripting stuff for tutorials and stuff, but I'm not actually using it in my own maps. because I'm like, oh, I could put a gate in my map, but that's kind of gimmicky, unless you really intentionally design around that. But it's, I don't know. So I'm kind of using scripting as a secondary outlet where, just this afternoon, I picked up this cool mini game called Turf War by Chewy Nut Cluster, where he's got all these basically, it's kind of like Splatoon, that Nintendo game, or mm-hmm. that Wii game.
Yeah.
Where you have to, the map is broken up into 12 tiles, and whichever team manages to paint all of the tiles their color wins. And I went into it because I was like, I had an idea in my head of like, oh, it must be scripted like this, right? I opened it up and it wasn't. And it was scripted much more complicatedly than that. So I just like gutted the whole thing and I was like, oh no, I have to script it like this way because it's simpler. I don't even know like what the benefit of doing it my way is, but I just want to do it, you know, as proof, but not actually using it in my maps. So it's kind of funny.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Chewy Nut Cluster and Turbtastic. They're mini games. Yeah,
Turb did some good stuff too.
Pretty ridiculous.
Like Usumo and stuff, yeah.
There are so many different maps out there too that are utilizing scripting. It's just, mm-hmm. I mean, well, there's so many maps, period. There's a lot of different things to play through, which is right. awesome.
We have moving objects.
Round objects?
I'm sensing scripting a theme here. Is,
I mean, I guess this is true of everything, but scripting is one area, especially where I've seen a ton of collaboration too. So like someone comes in and they're like, oh, I want to be able to do this. How do I do this? And then like, for example, there was the timers that fire consistently between different rounds because you have to account for the intros in each round, and the intro in the first round is longer than the intro in all the subsequent rounds. So, you know, Turbtastic posed a question about like how can we make a consistent timer for that when he was working on Mongoose Sumo. And then I came back and I had an idea and it didn't work. And then someone else came up with a different idea that worked a little bit better, but was still ultimately flawed. And then Knockyard came along with a different idea that worked even better. And then
Budokrain
came in.
Budokrain came in and did it with two objects and like three scripts in one and two scripts in the other, which is like a third of what I'm using.
Right.
And it's like, yeah. It's so simple. Right. It was so simple.
So everyone's just collaborating.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see.
Yeah. So the one thing that I started experimenting with for scripting was I wanted to make a breakout map that was like narrows, but it literally became more narrow over time. Oh. So breakout is an interesting game mode because the team size is actually dynamic over time. It's an elimination game mode, so the players on field become smaller over time on average. And I thought it would be interesting to start out with a 4v4 sized map that then kind of just slimmed down over time, just very gradually to kind of culminate to a map size that was more equivalent to 2v2 or 1v1.
Hmm.
And that was an interesting process.
Yeah.
Did you ever get that working?
No, I went on vacation.
Oh, right. Exactly. Because, yeah, I remember you started messing around with that.
Yeah, I had it going.
Yeah. That in theory, wouldn't be terribly difficult to do.
But, yeah.
So in addition to the scripting stuff, another cool feature that got introduced into Halo 5 was the grouping of objects. Have you guys been able to really utilize that in a lot of the maps that you've made?
Oh, yeah.
Everything?
Oh, yeah.
Every minute. Every minute of every forge.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. do something with it.
You know,
and it's not so much just the grouping. One of the cool benefits is just the selecting. Like when you're doing a map, and let's say you have a map that's a city map, and you have four lampposts that are all the same place. Well, now you can just place two and set the X and Z coordinates, and then place another two and set the Y and Z coordinates, and then you're done. You know what I mean? You can just select the common items, and when you go into the object menu, you just have to change the things that are common between them. It's so cool to be able to, like, I can select a mongoose, a spawn, and a block, and go into the group them, or select all three and go and change the similar attributes that the three would have, like set them to a team or whatever. You don't have to go and set team on this and then go to the next object and go to that next object. You can, you know, select like a mongoose, a weapon, a spawn, and a cloud generator or fog generator and set a common attribute on all three of them at exactly the same time. It's very, very handy. Very, it really speeds things up.
Yeah.
I mean, when you utilize it, a lot of people wouldn't think to utilize it, but I do every day. I find little new tricks and little hacks to make things go speedier.
Absolutely. You have to train yourself to start using that, which was something I kind of struggled with at first. I was doing things old-fashioned way, and then I
still find that I'm grabbing things as if I'm grabbing them and moving them and letting them go as if stealing all the other.
Just be careful.
Just when once you're in a while,
grouping objects together because
don't select your floor.
Accidentally welded himself to a group of trees and he's been stuck and he hasn't been able to escape since. So it can happen.
I kind of did that today.
I think it's perfect for him, you know, to be welded to a group of trees. I think he's very happy where he is.
I have a story about grouping as well. So I'm only working on one map right now. It's an ASIM, so I'm not using the grouping feature as much because each area is very different. I have been using it to like duplicate like ramps and certain things that are the same in each area. But so I made this spacecraft for my map, and I grouped it together, and I tried to duplicate it. And the second I duplicated it, my object count went from like 500 to 1,024. My light map doubled. Forge froze, and then the console like hard crashed, and then it didn't start back up for like half an hour. So
sounds like the apocalypse. So
I wasn't sure, smoke coming out of your
I wasn't
control.
Sure what was happening, but I texted, you know, War and Duck, and just freaking out.
Yeah, I remember those texts. It was like my world is collapsing. I was like, you want the deception?
Yeah,
no, I'm forging.
There are
my
some
spacecraft
new...
was just too cool for Forge to handle. Now I try to duplicate it.
There are definitely some bugs that came about with grouping when Forge was moved onto the servers, for sure. Like, all of these grouping bugs were not present, to my knowledge, on the builds we were using internally. Yeah. But grouping, I think, going back to something Faded was talking about earlier, is for the whole like rapid iteration on your maps. It's like, as more of a design tool, I mean, it has merit in other areas as well, like art and stuff. But when you're designing a map and you can just kind of block it out, like in really simple terms, and just, you know, multi-select and duplicate and stuff, it really speeds things up. Or if you're trying to scale a map, like when I was working on Guillotine at the studio, I kind of was going back and forth with Quinn Del Hoyo, the multiplayer designer, 343, about the scale, because we weren't used to playing Halo 5 at the time. This was before the game came out. We hadn't played it since the beta. And, you know, we certainly weren't used to designing for Halo 5. So the scaling with the new Halo 5 mechanics and stuff took some getting used to. So I kept iterating on the scale of my map. But what I was doing after a couple days was I was like, okay, I've got, you know, 3/4 of Headlong built here. And I just selected a third of it and just brought it in a, you know, 10 feet or something, and just kind of dynamically changed the scale of it on the fly, and was able to rapidly iterate on the scale of it, and ultimately, you know,
in real time.
Whereas in the past it would have taken like literally it would have taken hours to do that, because I would have had to move each piece individually. But it was like a low consequence environment, because I was like, oh, I could move it in this far. And then I was like, eh, that's too far. Okay, I'll just pick it up. And
then you forget about an object that is normal physics and just explodes.
Yeah, the Guillotine earthquakes. Oh, man. The first
that's
time
okay.
I did that.
We have the edit undo option for that.
There's this great clip on YouTube right now of these guys co-forging, and one of the guys sets like half the map to some other type of physics, and it just like falls away like into space.
Yeah,
so it's a really great video.
I did that to my map at the studio by accident. Like, I had this like 850 piece Headlong remake that I was working on, and I wanted to move the whole map, and I grouped everything, but that included the warthogs and weapons and stuff, which were on normal physics. And as soon as I did that, the map just exploded. It literally, like, I mean, stuff went everywhere, and
awesome.
I'm sure the look on my face was, Duquesne can probably attest to this. I mean, I was like, just I didn't know what to do. And then I recently saved, so it wasn't a big deal. And then later I was like doing it for fun. I was like, hey Mike, check this out, just like blown up my map. But
I was just doing that anyhow.
That should be a feature.
My first attempt at Deadlock, I duplicated or grouped. I spent like 15 minutes going through, making sure I had everything, grouped it all in the one big group, put my rotation box in the middle, which is a little technique I use. And then all I did was hit wrong way on the D-pad, and then poof, it was gone.
Oh, and you just deleted it.
I deleted my entire base, and I only had the one. So the base on deadline, that or deadlock, that's actually the third time I built that base. Because I once the server crashed and lost my map, and another time I just hit the wrong way in the D-pad, and just instead of duplicating it, and I knew I was doing it, and I saw the red line, and I just couldn't let go of the button fast enough. I swear they slowed down the delete button is like a split second slower than it was, or maybe it's just because I'm using a better controller. But I saw the red light, the red frame on it, and it still just vanished. And like I was heartbroken by that. Oh, I get to build it again. So it wasn't too bad.
Dang.
I do get a question though, when you mentioned controllers, and you guys may have this, you may not, I don't know. Have you guys utilized the Pro Elite controller in any way with forging?
Yes.
My God. I wanted to make a video about it just to share how awesome Elite controllers are for
Forge. Well, if you haven't sent me mine, so.
I actually.
What is this?
My controller.
I have two paddles on the back.
Okay.
That I just moved the right and left bumpers to. So now it's the exact same fly mechanic movement scheme from the previous Forges. And then the back bumpers are like my paint selection buttons. And it's just. Feels so comfortable.
Mine's the same. The upper paddles are the A and B button. So originally it was just A, B, X, Y. So bottom left I use when I press it, that just backs me out. It hits X to back you out of menu, so you don't have to hit back five times to get out of menu. I just pull on the left bottom. But what I found is I have mapped my lower right paddle to the left click. And you can cross Glacier in about 3 seconds.
What?
Because it's the turbo fly mode. Like if you press down on the pressing left click slows down your controller like to 1/10 the speed. But when you're moving forward and you hold it down, you go about 10 times, 15 times faster. So I map the left click to the bottom right paddle, and I can get from one end of the map to the other in I'd say two to three seconds at the most. And so you use that, just these little bursts of speed to get around the map. I'm getting you. It's hard to get used to because you move so fast.
Mm-hmm. Wow!
But yeah, that's been great. I actually said at first I wasn't going to use the controller for forging because I know I'll wear it out if I do.
So. How long did it take you guys to actually learn, for it to stick in your head? Because I mean, I've been using mine 3 days. I'm still learning mine.
You mean the controller,
yeah.
Or you mean
the Forge controllers
in general?
Well, I'm just saying because like the Forge controls in general for me were really complicated. I was used to the first time I actually went in the Forge, Duquesne was with me, and I was just lost. Like I had no idea what was going on, so I was hitting the bumpers thinking you'd go up and down because I was used to Force, and it was just doing
that was our number one day one complaint.
Yep.
Yeah,
and so that was
bumpers to the back paddles.
Yeah.
Okay,
just imagine how we felt when we were in Kirkland and they were like, hey, we have these new controls and we want you guys to make a map in a couple of days.
5 days.
We're like, yeah, okay.
I mean, well, Faded and I are very creative, like musically. So that level of like muscle memory in our brain was there with our like Forge control. So we do it with piano and all these other things. And the muscle memory is kind of like trained us to operate our controller scheme in the same way. So while Duck was able to kind of like quickly reinterpret a new control scheme very first day you kind of felt comfortable?
Comfortable after like the first hour or so.
Faded and I, we felt more comfortable on the second day.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We went back to our room that night and we're just like, this is the end of the world.
I don't know if you can see it, but the part of me where they were interviewing me off to the side, that was like in the sprint, that was like, I think the first or second day. And at that day, I was still kind of in panic mode, learning the controls and not liking some of the things about the new Forge. But like 10 minutes after that, it all started sinking in. So
Yeah, there's a point where it all clicks. Yeah, you realize that it's actually all way better. You just have to give it a chance for it.
Yeah, and the other problem is I was making a remake, so I was also having to fly around and forge on Halo 3, and it was like, I might as well have held the controller upside down for how confusing it was to fly around in Halo 3 and forge in Halo 3.
You
could
do that first, because it took a while to get...
It took me a whole day to get the console, so I was like way behind everyone else's build. Yeah.
And I were sharing that Halo 2 build, but we were just walking around in Spartan mode because obviously Halo 2 didn't have Forge. But
well, I was sharing mine with Knock and everything like at first.
Oh, yeah, you shared it with Knockyard at first, huh? And then you shared it with me.
Yep.
Sharing
I just share with everyone.
Yeah. I think the most challenging of the new controls was the new A and B function. I think like it's the simplest change, you know, where you just change where you go up or how you move up and down, but it was the hardest one to rewrite, you know? But after like a few days of using it, it made a lot more sense, you know. A is attack basically, so you go down, and B is to go back. So
another question I had for you guys. You guys do your maps on your time and going to Kirkland doing all these maps up there. Now, did you feel more, I know you were stressed out compared to what, you know, you had a certain amount of time, but did you feel that you dedicated more time while doing that there? Like compared to how you usually forge in real time, like how long do you guys forge normally? Like what, 2 or 3 hours a day? More?
No.
Less?
Much less than that.
Much more than that.
Okay. Oh. So
for me, anyhow. I was scared to death, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
Well, at least didn't y'all email him and say you knew you were going to be doing BTB maps before?
No, we didn't know that.
Oh no,
so I guess.
I guessed, and I was under the impression that it was a guess.
This was going to be for like, you know, mainly feedback, which is what we did while we were there, and possibly, you know, creating something. So I had something designed that was for 4v4, and then like 2 days before we arrived, I got this email from Mike, and he said, okay, guys, we're going to be looking at BTB map recreations.
That's the thing. I didn't get that email. Found out we were going to do a BTB is whenever I met y'all in the airport and y'all had BTB sketches. And I was like, so I guess we're making BTB.
Yeah, I had a heart attack.
Well, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, so on the plane, I kind of just was closing my eyes and imagining, you know, some layouts that I could go through. But it was a new experience for me. I designed a map from scratch in a day, I guess. And I think it turned out okay. But
to add on to what Nick's saying, I think that we're both in the same way that we play music, right? It's all about the inspiration, you know, the feeling for us. So for me, I never try to force a map design, you know? It's all about, you know, like, just taking days off or weeks off, and then I'll have this really good idea, and then I'll hop on Forge and I'll just knock it out in like 10 hours, right? And I'll just take this huge idea and make it happen. I won't sit there day by day and just keep trying to force a map design to work. It's just not how I work, you know? It's the same thing with playing music, you know? I'll start something and then I'll leave it for days until I find new inspiration and come back and keep working on it.
Right.
So having to, you know, tackle this map within a week, you know, it was definitely a challenge. It was a new experience, you know. It went against my instincts as a creative person or my type of creativity.
Something else that was really interesting that I thought was really interesting is something that I really want to try out just when I do maps that I want to do is that you guys had the entire, you know, you had the pro team there at your disposal so you guys can see certain flaws that you guys made that you may have not realized just that. How useful was that? And like, would you want to use as a community side of things, would you want to use that in the Forge creations now? Or would you just rather still go back to, all right, I'm just going to sit there and do a custom game, then come back and then go after it?
I got to say, the most useful tool available to us externally from the system itself may have been the endless supply of apple juice and coffee.
Yeah.
You know, you can say all you want about, you know, pro players testing this and that and having Josh Holmes in the room. But what really kept us going was probably the endless supply of apple juice.
I agree.
It really was.
It really was.
I completely agree. Yeah.
Just because he was talking about food things. And Josh Holmes's kebabs.
Ooh, oh, those were fantastic.
Barbecue.
Yeah, grilled kebabs. He brought in.
It's all about that
seasoning.
Someone
brought in a tray of them that was. You probably needed like a forklift to lift the thing.
Yeah.
And I just sort of walked and I said, like, is this for everyone or what's this? And like, I was like, just in surprise and said, oh, and the guy said, one of the programmers was there said, yeah, Josh Holmes makes these and gets me every now and then. So, not very, it said it's a very rare treat, but oh, they're just amazing.
That guy's a culinary expert.
Oh, yeah.
He did it Brazilian style chimichurri sauce. It fantastic. Yeah. Almost Middle Eastern too. Like it was a kind of cross between like Brazilian and Middle Eastern / Lebanese.
I wasn't analyzing it. I was just chewing it.
It was good food.
So is someone going to forge a cornucopia then?
Hunger Games.
Yeah, whenever.
They have those, right? People have been doing that for a while.
To add on to what War was saying about, you know, the apple juice and the protein. I think that our best resource was, you know, just having each other to look to, you know, to like find new ideas, you know, just having these other creative people and this creative energy there. And it's something that you don't have when you're at home on your couch, you know, like it's just you and your own process. But when you sit next to all these other creative people, you know, like Nick, for example, like he was working on part of his map and he was like, hey, Faded, come help me find a fix to this problem here, right? And then just having that new set of eyes come and look at it with that like new angle.
Then they went these Kyle and him went and did their twin speak thing where I was listening. I was actually listening to the words and I had no idea what they were talking about. When they went into the map theory and stuff like that, I was like, I have no idea what they're talking about. It's like twin speak.
Yeah, but just like having a new set of eyes come look at your project is so important, you know, because it's this new perspective, this new bias, this new way of problem solving. And that's kind of what the
whole also having like, the Forge team there and Pete and guys sitting in the room just killing time. They're just killing time. We found out later they were actually babysitting us because we weren't to be left alone. So they were like taking turns babysitting us. But there was like, you know, some, you know, designers who made many, many Halo multiplayer maps. Just chilling in there, just chatting up, chatting with us. So we not only get the technical side from Forge.
Yeah, they were awesome. Yeah.
They kind of had to babysit because we didn't follow their rules very closely. You know, like they told us that we could leave by 6 if we wanted to, but you know, we were there from 9 a.m. to midnight every day.
We skipped meals. They thought later. We were going to die.
Oh my God.
We didn't eat lunch most.
I think that was when Josh started making food because he's seriously concerned about our well-being. Yeah. He's like, these people, they're not eating. I'm not going to have these forgers die on my watch.
The grind is real whenever you're making
three
stuff.
Times throughout the week.
But but back to the protein, Dustin, they were really useful as far as just like, they knew the game mechanics so well that they'd come in and they'd be like, hey, Faded, check out this cool jump that you can do, like this cool button combo. And the second that Strong Side showed me how to do A, B, and C with the button combos, I put all that into my map, you know? Like, I wanted players to be able to find that over time, these really cool jumps and these ways that they can move across the map. And that's just a big part of how I design in general is around the game mechanics, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So having that...
Super nerd.
the super nerdy type of map design... like we have this joke with map design where it's like, you know, when you go to a theme park and there's like the sign, like how tall you have to be to ride a certain ride, right? Yep. Like I tend to make maps where you have to be quite tall to really master it. You know, like I have all these death pits and these punishing experiences. So you really have to be a pretty good player to survive the map. It's just how I build. But yeah, I mean, it was great having the pros there to show us these cool button combos, these cool ways to use the game that we would have taken, you know, weeks to find out.
So what's kind of the biggest thing that you've taken away from the new Forge? Like, what's that kind of big change in your guys' mind that's like, this is what really sets Halo 5's Forge apart from the rest of Forge?
Well, for me, it comes down to one thing. The fire's lit, you know. I actually genuinely and obsessed with creating maps again. I haven't felt this way in a very long time. So for me, the previous iterations of Forge, they were always just competing against my imagination. I could never really create something to the standards that I held in my head. And that's why I always tried to extend whatever kind of means we had available to us as much as possible, like using the modded canvases. And still, that wasn't like enough for me. So finally, I have a palette that I can access, you know, with multiple brushes. And I feel like that creative energy is now just alive again.
Yep.
And I think it's too, is that all the other versions of Forge, you had to suspend disbelief in a map. And when you're making a map, it's like, okay, this block here, that's the fridge, that block there, that's the stove. And a player comes in and they just see two blocks. Well, now we can, you know, make it look like a fridge and make it look like a stove. I'm just using that as an example because I'm looking at a fridge and a stove right now. But you get the idea. Is that now we can actually make things look like what they're supposed to be rather than have to, yeah. You know, everyone here squint your eyes at this map. You know,
that or someone's hungry.
And then have all the yeah. like lighting effects and any noise type of things and. Stuff like that, especially for things like Infection, whenever that game type comes out, people will be making some ridiculously scary stuff that I don't want to play, but I'll play yeah. it anyways.
Well, you mentioned something that was kind of pretty cool too, what that the new lighting effects system, the particle effect system, and the sound effects system, those are all really completely new in the Halo 5 Forge. So that's mm-hmm. some really cool dynamics. And I know for me, I'm a lot more into the machinima aspect of forging. So when it comes to like making scenes or developing sets, I can see those really get utilized or will be utilized whenever we see a lot more machinima come out.
Yeah, I still think sounds need to be expanded on a bit. We need to have map-wide sounds as well. So that, you know, when you hit a button and a door opens, if you're standing right beside it, you can generate a sound and apply it to the script, but no one else in the map knows it. No one else can hear it. There should be like a map wide or extending volume ranges or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's the cool thing is that I think that's the most important feature that we never had before was a team that listened to us and actually replied to us and actually implemented our ideas. Like I think the best thing is Trapezoids. I mean, you can thank Warhawk for Trapezoids because they weren't there when we were there. And he drew up this diagram and showed how important Trapezoids are. And now Trapezoids are in the game. It's so cool to be able to, you know, not cool that they're in there. I mean, it is cool that they're in there, but cool that they're this time there's actually a team there behind it. Not just here's Forge. Goodbye.
Yeah. Like a lot of the aesthetic stuff weren't there, like the cars and everything like that. Like, yeah. Cranes and
they were talked about. Yeah,
Psychoduck's giant warthog billboard.
Oh yes. Yeah,
you know,
might be. Yeah, they built all that stuff, or pulled it from campaign and stuff after we were there, which was really cool. Continuing on, like what Knockyard was talking about is in the past with every iteration of Forge would come out, and that would be more or less what we were stuck with. So Halo 4 Forge came out, and within the first week. These issues became apparent that were anything from minor inconveniences to major annoyances. And we were still dealing with those same exact issues 2 years later when the Master Chief Collection came out. Like, it never changed. With this iteration of Forge, it's actually much more open-ended. So, you know, these bugs and things that are present right now, like, those are going to be fixed. That missing scripting functionality that we were talking about earlier, that's going to be added in later. You know, just all that stuff. So it's this constantly evolving thing. It's not like, okay, here's Forge, we'll be back in 2 years with the next one, and if you have any problems with it, that's too bad, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the first things they said, is that it was designed from the ground up that way so that it was something that they could update. And I think the way it, like, it's much more complicated than what I'm saying, obviously everything is, but I believe that the last Forge, they would take it and they would drop Forge in on a map so that you could forge on a map. Now, I think it's the opposite way. I think Forge is this big box and they just drop the canvases into the exact same box. So that's why we can get the exact same palette on each map, and where before each palette was map specific and built into the actual map. So they've changed the entire structure on how Forge and the game itself works just to make it so that, you know, they have all the knobs and switches on their end that they can make these changes on the fly if they need to.
Yeah, being able to add stuff in there, which is really cool. So if there's any community requests for a particular asset or a sound system.
Not just add stuff in, but they can add something in and then we can put it into an old map where they couldn't do that before. Before, if they added something in, it had to go in a new map and your old maps stayed the same way and your new maps had the new feature. Now you can take the map you built day one and add the Warthog with the three Gauss guns on it. You can just add it to all your maps that you already had.
That was a thing.
A thing, by the way. I'm glad we brought.
And that's mainly because there was a glitch for Halo 5 is automatically downloaded. You don't. It's not an option asking you if you would like to download this material.
Yeah.
You can't play the game unless you update the system. So that is in turn a huge advantage to release content or hot fixes in the future because it's going to be ubiquitous. It's not going to just affect the people that, are opting into updating their system. It goes to everyone, you know, globally.
That was something that killed us in Halo 4 with Forge Island was the fourth Forge canvas that was added in after the game came out. And that was kind of like the one big update to Forge, like over the game's lifespan. And Forge Island was never a required download. And it wasn't required for any playlists. So when we were going in to pick maps to integrate into matchmaking playlists, we were like, oh, well, okay, so we've got this great Forge Island map that would be a perfect fit for the Team Slayer playlist. But if we put it in, no one's ever going to play it because most people who aren't Forgers, who are just playing the game, didn't download Forge Island.
And so, I also heard of people that actually deleted it because they didn't want to play Forge maps and matchmaking, so they would just delete it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it was because there was a certain map that everyone hated, but we don't need to go that route right now.
Hmm. Well, that was an option on one of the maps they were with us to reforge, and we were like, what?
Ixnay.
So we're on takeaways, right? That's the topic right now. One of my big takeaways is something really small, but just colors in general. You know, having colors is so, it's just such a big addition to Forge. You know, like it's such a small thing, and the Forge team there, you know, they presented it and they kind of just moved right onto the next thing. But for all of us there, you know, like just having this huge suite of colors to pick from, it really makes it so that each map looks very different. There's no two maps that look the same now because people can really bring out their personality within the color palette. And colors, you know, like people strongly relate to certain colors, you know, like I personally love shades of purple and blue and green. And
I never guessed purple on your map.
And I want to use those colors all the time just because they just, you know, they're so close to my personality. Right. So, just being able to use those colors on my maps, you know, it just makes them feel so much more like something that I created, you know, that I'd create if I had colors to choose from. And I think that that's something that a ton of Forgers have picked up on. You know, they're really starting to apply color theory and bring out their personality within the maps themselves, which was something that wasn't there in previous Forges.
Nice.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, you can do, like, everyone has always been asking for, like, a Covenant-themed stuff.
Yes.
And people are able to make some ridiculously amazing Covenant objects with just, you know, putting that purple color, you know, to all the rounded objects and things like that. And, like, there is a, just recently, I think today on Reddit, someone posted something, or it was today or yesterday, someone posted something, they're making Snowbound, and he made the bases of Snowbound, and it looks ridiculous. Snowbound. Yes, yeah. It looks exactly like Snowbound's bases. And this is the same guy who made that Pit remake.
Oh, Wyvern Zoo?
He did Wyvern Zoo. I got mixed up.
But this guy, like, he remade the Pit. It looks unbelievable. But then he's remaking Snowbound now, and the bases look exact. And it's
that's amazing. Awesome.
You know, so people are able to make some, you know, Covenant themes and things like that. And it's all strictly from the colors, you know, because it wouldn't really look Covenant without the whole purple color and the metallic that type of thing and everything.
So what do you guys think about the blocks mostly having no textures at all versus having some with textures?
I think that's the best thing in the world, personally.
That's great. I agree. It's great. I
think they started with more texture and they took some out.
Yeah, I kept pushing them to take more out.
Yeah.
I would like them to be even.
You said little pipes and things sticking out that we asked to get rid of.
Yeah.
That was my huge complaint. Go ahead, Fade.
There's a lot of people that don't really understand why having less texture is better. But I think the best way to kind of talk about it is, you know, when you have really simple primitive objects, you can combine them in a very seamless way. So you can really kind of mold this geometry and create something entirely new. And you can't even tell that it's multiple pieces, you know, like you can create this really, it's really crazy space. And the more texture that you add to an object, the more lines, the more, you know, grit, the more obvious it becomes that things are mismatched, mm-hmm. that they don't belong together. And, you know, with the end product, you know, with a really polished map, yes, it would be nice to have texture applied to certain things to really bring out that feeling of place, right? But when you're making the map in this early stage, like this blockout stage, just being able to really mold geometry in a way that's unique and, you know, is convincing is really important.
Yeah.
And it really just makes the map more readable, more playable. And that's ultimately what we really strive to do is to make spaces that people can understand. You know, they can clearly see that's a wall, that's a floor, that's the ceiling, that's a ramp, that's snow, that's sand, right? There's no question what they're looking at. And the more texture you have, the more confusing it becomes sometimes.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
So do you think it's something where maybe, because there is the terrain projection, so could they do like a texture projection maybe down the road somewhere?
Well, we already have one in Breakout.
Well, and they can't do one though like how the terrain is, because the terrain is just all terrain is textured, you know, that one way.
Well, like, because if you not necessarily. So Breakout has a floor texture, and then when you start bringing out the natural objects and the terrain, you know, those textures also kind of uniformly fit together.
Well, yeah,
so
but
you
the
can
terrain,
have cooperant.
The terrain, it doesn't
predator.
Matter what canvas though you're on, it still projects the same, like. Sheet. The terrain, the terrain sheet. Like, even if you're on Parallax, it projects the same Alpine terrain sheet, you know, that Alpine has. So, like, and the thing is, though, I would like to see, since you don't want to necessarily have that with walls, because, and things like that, because what if you don't want that projected texture on the wall, then it causes issues, you know?
I disagree.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, like, you have a texture that you want to, like, say you have a group of objects. When apply that texture to that group,
that would be cool. That would work a little bit differently than the current projected terrain texturing system. I guess we're kind of getting hung up on the details. Functionally, yes, I think that would be fantastic.
If there's a way you can highlight all the objects, like how you color objects, like after you multi-select and then you color them all like green, but then you could texture them all a certain texture, that would be great.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking. Something like that.
Yeah. I think it's definitely possible. Like, I'm just going to bring up a different game here because it's another advanced level editor tool. But in a game that, you know, you might not really think has such advanced tools, and it's called Disney Infinity. So I got this game for my 6-year-old nephew for Christmas, and I ended up playing it just as much as he was.
I freaking love Disney Infinity.
Yeah, and it's amazing. Like, you can assign new textures to all of the objects. You can differentiate between floor, wall, ceiling. You can change the skyboxes in real time. And, like, all of these features. And I was just like, wow, I've been so accustomed to Forge and not having any of these things available. And all of this is still very much possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's what, I hope they could do something like how you paint walls, you know, off multi-selecting and stuff, but you could just paint a texture, like, and you can have multiple different types of textures, you know, on it. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. So. It's been talked about.
Certainly. Yeah. It's been talked about.
Good.
They know.
Yeah. It's just something that you really have to be careful with as a designer, you know, because when you have something that has too much three-dimensional texture, right? Like, it can really change how the object actually is interacted with, you know, like how players interact with the object itself. And that can sometimes be a really bad thing, you know, like when walls have certain clippings that will make nades bounce incorrectly, right? Make a nade bounce back at you instead of bounce off the wall in a direction towards the enemy player. And a ton of forgers, they're, you know, they focus more on making the space feel real first before focusing on how players will actually interact with that wall or with that ramp, right? And I think it's really important, you know, to be careful how you go about making your walls and your ramps and your floors. And this forge is so great because it really kind of is representative of the actual map design process at like a studio, where you start with something very, very basic in like Maya, for example, with geometry that's very, just no texture at all, just pure geometry. And, you know, they'll create their map designs and then they'll test them in that state and they'll keep designing, keep iterating. And then ultimately it gets passed off to art. And you can do that same process now with Forge, where you create a block out, you test it, you iterate over and over and over until you're finally happy with it. And then you can invest all this time and arting it and applying more texture, you know, and having certain walls have, you know, more texture to them and more art design, and having some that are really essential to gameplay, so they're less detailed, you know? It's a delicate balance between the gameplay design and the environment art design. And it really takes multiple minds, I think. It takes people that are much better at the map design and the gameplay design first, and then people that really have the art feel, you know, for the environment. And there's some people that can do both really well, like Warholic, for example. For me, I'm much better at the first part and not as good at the environment art. So, yeah, that's just one more thing to add.
Cool.
That's why I think they should have, like, not texturing the blocks themselves, like having bumps in them or anything like that. It should just keep, like, the primitive blocks, things like that. That's fine. But then having another type of color, instead of it just being a solid color, like solid green, solid blue, whatever, just having it like, I don't know, like a watermelon, you know, look to it. Like that's the color, is like, it could be like watermelon or something. And basically it would have like that dark green and light green, like stripes type of thing on there, like on the actual color. So it colors it. It's all seamless. So you don't see any type of like replicating pattern or something, you know, but like you don't see where it stops and, you know, starts again. So it all is completely seamless. So you can actually paint a wall or something to be that pattern to be on there. Instead of it just being a solid green, you can have it have that, you know, watermelon pattern or something like that. So like, I hope they do something like that eventually. Just add a whole bunch of different, they can have some UNSC type of looking wall or something, like Covenant, the Covenant purple, you know, or something. I don't know.
Yeah, with the honeycomb texture.
Yeah.
Like wood grain or
red. Yeah, like stuff like that, that could just be painted. You know, it's just a paint that goes on the wall.
And so just to wrap things up, I know we've been kind of going get up to 2 hours here, but last thing I wanted to kind of ask before we wrap up, and I hope you guys can come on again, because there's definitely lots of other stuff that would really love to talk about. But for all the stuff that we have in Halo 5 Forge, what's kind of the one thing that you guys want to see back in Forge?
Terrain editor. Terrain, like, that was the, if you
legitimate
to the video terrain, when they were saying, okay, we're going to go to the new features, and I was like, is there a terrain editor? Like,
Warholic, you put, whenever they're interviewing him for this stuff, they cut it out of it. Whenever they're interviewing, he was talking about having water blocks, like water, being able to place water. And so they're like, it's in the sprint episode now. You got to put it in. But of course, they cut it out of
it. Yeah, they cut all of it out. I was talking about all my favorite, like, what are your favorite features? I was like, well, the new waterfalls that you can place are amazing. The water blocks and the acid pits and the lava pits. And they're like, yeah, this is really cool. I haven't never seen this stuff before. And then they chopped it out. So if you don't see me talking about the features in Forge, it's because I was talking about stuff that didn't even exist.
One big feature that is probably not doable for this version of Forge, but maybe for the next one, is true 3D modeling. It's a really important feature that programs like Maya have, where you can start with like this basic shape. And you can actually grab the faces and the vertices and the edges and stretch them in any way that you want to. And you can truly just create geometry spontaneously, right? And it's something that I've been playing around a ton with in Maya, just in my own free time as I'm learning the program. But it, like, if we could truly, you know, just mold together this 3D model, you know, in Forge, it would be really cool. Yeah. You'd have really unique geometry. Like, people would get insanely creative. We had a true 3D modeling function.
Yeah. And that would Little be also so. Terrain editing. You know, it's the
yeah,
same.
Yeah, Little Big Planet.
Little Big, yeah, it's there. Yeah. It doesn't even have to be in Maya. It's in Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's also in other first person shooters. Like, an indie game has object construction tools. Reflex, like, their level editing tool is amazing. Yeah. They have sizable dynamic lights. They have lava. They have object construction with vertex editing. Extremely important because not only are you creating blocks that are squared off three-dimensionally, you can then customize them to having 45-degree angles or creating different shapes. Vertex editing and object construction is going to be impacting a huge aspect if they introduce that.
Well, then you wouldn't have to have all the billion different objects that are in the menu system, like a 2x48x62. Like, you don't have to worry about all that. You just have one single, you know, thing, and or maybe like a couple different things for different sizes to start off with. But that's all you have to have. And then people just mold it to wherever they want.
You could have no objects at all. I mean, that's how Maya works. You know, you just, you know, you type
like
in
to have props.
The exact dimensions.
It's good for set dressing.
It would be nice to have a base set, but, you know, it would also be cool where you could just type in, you know, I want an object that's 20x20x40. You know, and it just spawns.
Just spawns. And, that would be great.
If they could cut out the entire primitive section and instead have a single object that was based basically like placing a volume, like a hill volume in Forge, which you can currently place as a box or a circle. You know, but if you could do that, and you could maybe select from other options like a triangle or whatever, and then modify the dimensions, but it was actually a solid piece, and then you could apply textures to it, like we were talking about earlier, and modify the vertices, that would be, I mean, you know, that would be like beyond amazing. It would be 3D modeling at that point. You can do anything you wanted and create seamless geometry and stuff. And
what would be great with this object construction tool is, and I know everyone believes that, you know, performance is a non sequitur right now. It's actually like really great, but it would improve performance that much more. True. I mean, because instead of using multiple objects with light mass attached to each one, you're basically creating and stretching like these objects where you don't need to piece together. So they're not piecemeal or grouped. It's just like a singular entity that's extremely performant and efficient. And the same would go for terrain editors. If we had a terrain editor introduced, like, we wouldn't be piecing together 100 different objects that each have light mass and performance budgets. Like, it would be extremely performant and efficient. Because it's a singular entity.
I was just gonna say real quick. I'll just gonna ahead, say though, what I've said all along is have Forge separate from the game itself on console. Have Forge strictly on PC, and like have a super robust PC Forge or something on there, and then you can basically just move your maps over like how you would do on, you know, like old games, like in Halo Reach or something online, like you can download and it would just download to your Xbox and just have Forge separately on the PC. So you can have something ridiculously robust and it's a lot more precise to use a mouse and everything. And so, and then that would be, I would say, the best option for
that model is very similar to like Counter-Strike, for example. I think Counter-Strike has a separate level editor from the game itself. And, you know, it's really cool what people can create in that because it's its own PC software.
That's
right?
Typical on PC games.
It is typical, yeah. And since StarCraft. Halo is a console game, they ultimately probably want to keep it all on console, you know, just to have it be
they could have,
one
yeah,
experience.
Yeah, a lot of people would not get back and say that it's a bad idea because you remove the console population to create maps. Yeah. And this is where I would say that it works both ways. And to bring back the Disney Infinity game, so while they still have a really simple version to use on console, they also have a more advanced application that's available on PC that they can then port their creations over via Windows 10 to their consoles. So it's available and it's easy. It's accessible. You can have it all if they just build it that way.
Heck, I don't even care. Charge $10 for a PC Forge and have it super robust. You know, there you go, Microsoft. You can make more money off of it.
Yeah, little kids are doing it. My 6-year old nephew, you know, has the ability to port over maps from PC. Is he going to do it? Probably not. But
that's if they did that, I would. I don't even know what I would do. But
something that they did a really good job on, and once again, going to Duquesne because he's the one that actually showed me this, was Project Spark. I think they did a phenomenal job with that. If they somehow incorporated something like that into Forge at some capacity, I think that would blow people's minds.
Project
like
Spark the amount did a really good job with all that stuff.
I agree with the brain scripting.
Yeah, well, there's brain scripting and the terrain editing in Project Spark was great. Like, and you can paint textures. You literally paint them wherever you want them to go and stuff. So it's like that type of thing would be great. They need to look at Project Spark for that type of stuff.
Duquesne, you use Spark? Because I don't use Spark. Is the terrain editor voxel-based? Or is it volumetric terrain where you can create holes, caves, or overhanging cliffs?
Yes.
Oh, wow. See, like, this is what we need. Like, we don't need to create a standard-based terrain editor in future Forge systems. We need to go more advanced. Far Cry 1 on the original Xbox had a terrain editor. We need a voxel-based terrain editor to create holes, caves, all of that jazz.
That's what Project Spark is. It's basically, you can have a square and like a circle, a sphere, you know, and stuff. And that's basically your cursor. And then once you hit A, it fills up with the terrain in whatever cursor, and you can expand it or, you know, make it smaller, a lot more, however you want. And so once you hit A, it fills that up with terrain, and then you just move your cursor while holding down A, and you basically just paint terrain wherever you want. So
you can kind of mold for water effects too, which was nice. You can put different things in, so you can like make rivers and
that's the thing lakes. That while we were there at 343, I was telling him to do water blocks and stuff. That's what Project Spark does. They have just blocks that you expand and everything. Like you can actually stretch out like a hill or something, but it's a block of water. And so you can, you know, just put a bunch of those blocks of water or stretch it out super far as big as you need it. And you can make like a lake or, you know, a river or something like that. So it's just a block of water. That's also, you need that.
Well, yeah, and you can create rivers, you can create streams, ponds, that kind of stuff. And there's a little more dynamic element to it. Because if you take the Ivory Tower remake that's just come out recently, you put the pools of water back down on the bottom of the level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we can do that now.
You can still do that with glass and caustic gobos
from
lights. But
it's not water, though. You can
still do it without the glass.
Yeah.
Well, no.
You don't splish splash. They need to have it to where you can have like a little water sound at least, you know, in Halo 5. You know, so then you can at least once you go in that little area, you hear the water.
For things that are ankle deep, we have that now. If we want anything, you know, from the waist up, we don't have that at all.
Well, you have it to a point. Like you can't make Beaver Creek correctly because the underground part of the bases would be underwater too.
Correct.
You know? So it's like you have it to a point, but it's like it would be nice to be able to, you know, have water. Mm. So
yep.
That lava.
I don't even care if it's put a decal, have a water decal, you know, like forget it. Who cares about having it going? Just make it to where then it's ankle deep. Like you can't.
You know, we had this conversation with them while we were there.
Yeah, just put a decal over, you know, so you can have like, that'd be fine.
We'll take anything.
Just give me something.
And they're like, no, we have standards here. People look at our game.
We don't have
standards. It's like, we're like just hungry addicts. We'll take whatever we can get.
We had a lot of great conversations about a lot of random stuff there. I think one of the best ones was one I had with Andy or Bravo. We were talking about curved ramps in the Halo franchise. And we had this whole debate about like how many maps actually have curved ramps. And we're sitting there at dinner just going back through like every Halo map in history. trying to decide which ones actually had curved ramps and which ones didn't. And it was just this really great conversation. Because I personally really wanted to have curved ramps as an option in Forge. You know, like
cylindrical
just to have the midship ramps, basically, you know, and you could use those in a ton of cool ways. It hasn't happened yet, but hopefully that's part of their, you know, their future plans.
Yeah.
To get some cool ramps in there.
Cool. Well, I know we've kind of gone on for a while. There's definitely lots more to talk about. So hopefully you guys can come back again and talk to some more Forge stuff. I know we can definitely get into some conversations with the scripting and lighting and actually making math and that kind of stuff.
We'll have a whole show on file share.
Yeah, probably. So just going to kind of go around the chat room. If you guys want to plug your stuff real quick, starting with Duquesne.
There's things that you can go check me out on.
They're all horrible. I wouldn't
Be specific.
Halo Vanguard's YouTube channel. But the URL is Duquesne23, but I changed it to Halo Vanguard's. ForgeChannel.com is my own little website I started for custom maps. Twitch, Duquesne23. Twitter, Duquesne23. Everything else, Duquesne23.
Awesome. So. Psycho Duck?
Well, so my website is HaloCustoms.com. It's a forum. And
you just joined Twitter yesterday.
I just joined Twitter a couple of days
ago. A couple of days ago,
Yep. No one follow him.
And so I have a Twitter.
Did you vote on the pallet poll?
Yes, I did. I voted Covenant.
Oh my god. I'm never gonna get a Forerunner pallet.
I also many people may know I used to run this channel called the Halo Forge Epidemic. That channel no longer exists, but I am now running the Forge Hub YouTube channel. And I got a great team over there. So that's a great channel to check out, especially if you want
soothing Forge music tutorials. And soothing voice.
Oh yeah, if you want some smooth jazz,
yes,
for Forge videos, that's definitely.
It's
the
not
place.
Like me, where I'm like, "What's up, everyone? Duquesne23
here."
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I know. When I met you at the airport, I was like, "Wow, your voice is a lot."
Oh, you're not yelling.
I have my YouTube voice compared to my normal.
Yeah,
voice.
Yeah. So, and I was can you please introduce yourself with like your YouTube channel? And then he put it on. And I was like, "Yes." Slow clap. Thank you. It was
amazing. If you want to see the relevance of how he used to be, look up his like previous videos first, like back in Reach Day. It's that's him. I'm monotone, negative sounding.
What's up, guys? Duquesne23 here with another. Like that's my first voice stuff.
Nice.
Hi there, Warholic here with Forge Home.
No.
Hey, check out my infection map.
I'm never gonna have a YouTube presence.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I also Twitch stream almost every Forge session unless I'm doing actual stuff for 343. But my Twitch show is more just, it's very informal. There's no schedule. There's no format. There's no nothing flashy about it. But I sneak tutorials in, and about every 5 to 10 minutes, I'll sneak a little tutorial. And so if you watch it, you can't help it. You're going to learn stuff.
Nice.
And, I have informal, tests and things like that. And if you show up, I play your map. Simple as that. We look at your map and what I'm doing with the show, as I said, it's very informal. I'm interviewing the forgers without them knowing it is basically what I'm doing.
That's cool.
I will make the most unenjoyable map in history.
Because I find when if you bring someone in and you tell them you're doing a show, I mean, like what we're doing tonight, you know, this is great, but I want to get people in and just have them talk about their stuff without feeling like the pressure of being on a show. They're just in there forging. I want to know what they're passionate about. I want to know what inspires them to make maps and that sort of thing. So as I say, I interview people without them knowing it.
Okay.
And now they know.
And now they know.
Figures out. No one's half the battle.
So as long as no one.
Joe. I did not just say that.
You just did.
Yeah, you did.
Forever and it's been recorded.
Yes, you did.
It's recorded on the internet.
It's in the cloud. Nothing you can do about it now.
Dun, dun, dun. You want to plug the rest of your stuff while you're at it, Knockyard?
The rest of my stuff. We don't have any rest of my stuff yet.
Griffball Hub.
I'll plug a whole. Oh yes, go to Griffball Hub. But it's basically where if you want to play Halo Reach Griffball, that's the place to go.
All right,
because that's what they're doing right now. Actually, they're probably wrapped it up for the night, but they're doing playing Halo Reach on their stream tonight because, you know, it's we're just sitting there twiddling our thumbs waiting for a hammer to show up.
Well, hopefully you guys get it soon because I'm really looking forward to Griffball on Halo 5.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Cool.
I'm sure that when it does come out, you'll probably have Goose and Cal and the gang on the show because they'd love to talk about it. I'm sure.
Probably will.
Oh yeah.
Warholic, how about you?
Oh me, I thought I already gave my plug in earlier. You know, Fortub.
Fortub.
That's it. You can find me on Fortub.com.
Cool. Then Faded Fire.
You can find me at Twitter at the Faded Fire. And although I don't have like a home website, you can find some really long map design posts from the Faded Map Design Bible on Fortub.
You have your own Bible. Nice.
They not an actual Bible, it's just kind of scattered everywhere. But you know, it's an entertaining read if you want to go find them. So yeah,
drama inciting.
Yeah, they're very drama inciting.
Your Jimmy's may be Russell.
Calls lots of bad blood sometimes, but you know, they are.
Yeah,
they're interesting. At least
very
they
good
get
read.
People thinking about map design and what we're really doing. You know, is you know, we're creating escapes for people, and I try to kind of bring this big attention to that. So,
cool.
Escapism and heroism and. Yep. Just having players feel like heroes, you know, so yep. That's my focus.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for coming onto the show. Like I said before, hopefully you guys can come back on the show and do another few Forge related discussions a little bit later on. This has been a privilege and an honor for speaking with all you guys. Thank you very much for contributing to Forge and helping build the Forge that we have today. It's really cool to see that 343 has taken a lot of the input that you guys have to offer and really kind of change Forge for the better. So that's really awesome. So shout out to you guys, and shout out to 343 for taking community feedback. Those are awesome.
Yeah, shout out to Ben Walker. We haven't mentioned him. He's like man. Forge programmer, awesome guy.
Yep, Mike Byron, Tom French, the whole Forge team.
All those guys. The whole team's fantastic.
It really is amazing what they created. You know, they're such a small team, but they're so passionate about what they're doing. And they really just understand, you know, why Forge is so great, you know, why it's so attractive to people that are creative like us. So they really picked the right team of guys to make this awesome part of the game for us.
Yeah.
Yep. Shout out to the Forge team.
Nice. Well,
and remember, Forgers out there, save every time you smile.
Smile every time you save?
Save every time you smile. Every time you do something nice, make sure you save it.
Unless you block all your spawn points.
Oh yes, shut up! Yeah. I destroyed a map today.
I guess there needs to be some kind of like autosave revision system for Forge.
Yeah. That's another whole show.
Edit undo.
Right.
All right. Well, everyone, thank you for listening to the show. Remember, you can check out the podcast network. We are part of a conglomerate of gaming-specific shows, with shows like Critcast, Guardian Radio, The Learning Cliff. And a few other shows as well. So please go over to the podcast network. You can find that at podka.st. And let them know that we sent you. And you can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all that fun stuff. So please check us out there. Please check out these guys and all of their related channels, Twitter accounts, and all that fun stuff. I will say that for a lot of the custom maps and the tutorials that you guys have been putting out, it has kept me entertained over the holidays. So thank you very much for all the effort.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Pleasure to be here.
This is going to be us wrapping it up, and keep on fragging cartographers, because they're awesome.